Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop here with you. And following on from the death of Queen Elizabeth II, the Premier League has postponed this coming weekend's round of fixtures as a mark of respect. We can now welcome in Julien Laurent to tell us more about this. Jules, what can you tell us about how the decision was actually made to postpone the weekend's matches?
Yes, we had a statement this morning in England around 11:30 it was, I think, for the Premier League to announce what you've just said, that there will be no football matches this weekend to pay tribute to the Queen, to the late Queen, to respect in respect. It was a decision taken by the Premier League. In itself, the government said that if they wanted, the games could have happened and could have taken on. There was enough policing, there was enough resources for policing and everything. The royal family didn't object to matches as well, they didn't say anything to. So it was clearly a decision taken by the Premier League, by the clubs, which is respectable, of course. You can understand why. There's a few fans who I think would have liked to have gone to the games and would have paid their own tribute to the Queen had they gone to the matches. He also obviously asked the question about when will those games being played, of course, in a very, very tight schedule, certainly until the new year. And then there's also the possibility that next weekend games will be also postponed. But this time, because the policing could be a problem, an issue, because we know that the funeral will probably happen next Monday, and that obviously the police all around the country will be committed to the funeral of the Queen. So then in that case, they wouldn't be able to be at football matches. So there's potentially two weekends in a row with no Premier League matches, but certainly for this weekend, for now, officially there will be no football in England.
Thanks, Jules. Well, let's take a look at how things do stand in the Premier League table right now. When action does return, we'll be seeing the Graham Potter era get underway. At Chelsea, the team he overtakes are currently in sixth, as you can see in the table, and they are coming off that surprise loss to Dinamo Zagreb in the Champions League. We'll bring in Nader Manua now to talk about this too. But I will start with you, Craig. How is Graham Potter going to fix this team?
Depends how broken you think it is. I mean, that's a difficult question. I don't know what he's going to do exactly with the personnel. He has a striker now in Aubameyang that was the signing of Thomas Tuchel, ironically, at the end, a player that he'd worked with before. He has the personnel, if everybody's fit, to chop and change. And obviously, the latest scenario involving the death of the Queen is now through the postponements and potential further postponements, we don't know, is going to give him a little bit more time for these players to work on the training ground. But look, it's going to take him a little while to get to stamp his authority on this side. I'm super happy for him. Here's a guy that's went out, most people know the story, couldn't get a job, decent job in England or in Britain, went over to Scandinavia, did a great job coaching over there with a very small club, got this opportunity at Brighton off the back of a very pragmatic approach from Chris Hughton, one that didn't get the supporters excited, but generally kind of got the job done. Brighton wanted to change direction. It was a risk, but they did, and they got their full rewards for that, not only in league positions, but recruitment of players, sale of players, and performances on the field. You think about it. You know, he's sitting, what, is it fourth at the moment in the Premier League or around there, Brighton?
Yeah.
Or Brighton, his former team now. But they sold Bissouma, who I'm a big fan of, to Tottenham and Cucurella in the summer, and they still managed to have a great start. They had a super finish. Was it the highest ever finish you were talking about last year to a league season? And yet, partway through that league season, the wheels fell off. They couldn't get the ball in the back of the net, yet still managed to finish strong. So I'm really excited about the fact that Chelsea haven't just gone out and plucked a retread from these big names around Europe who have been good managers, and some of them still are, and went, there's the next Chelsea manager, come in for a year or two. I'm excited with the fact, at least on the face of it, there might be a longer term, might be a slightly longer term approach here.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because obviously, as you're saying, the time that he's coming in and there's been a few problems so far with Chelsea. With that in mind, Nader, how big of a job is this for Potter?
Obviously for him, you know, it's the biggest job that he's had. But in terms of Chelsea and their struggles, I don't think it's going to be like the biggest issue in the world. I think the style of play that he has, as I see it, it's not a million miles away from where Tuchel was beforehand. But I think the key bit in terms of the recruitment of him is the ability for him to make players better. I think when you look at the Brighton side that he's had over the past couple of years, like, he's maximising those players' potentials. And when they play in games against sides, very rarely do you see them being outplayed by the opposition, even though apparently the talent should be greater for them. So I think when he then gets the talent on board, if he can sort of hone in the sort of mentality that he wants and the style that he wants him to play in, then you'd expect the outcomes to be greater. And Chelsea, you know, for as much as they've not started the season as well as they would have wanted to, you know, they're in sixth. They're not a million miles away from not a million miles away from being in top four. Obviously, they need to get past the mighty Man United to get in there, but they're not a million miles away from that whatsoever. So I think ultimately, it's just little details, like the result against Zagreb is a bad result. But for those players, maybe there's a bit of belief, maybe it's a new sort of like training method. And I think overall, like, managers, they do have a shelf life, for as good as they are, is the impact at some point will wane. So maybe that was the case for Chelsea in this instance, and seeing somebody walk through the door who is a very well-respected manager within England, maybe he can be the person that can just give them that 1% extra. And when the margins are so small, that 1% can go so far. So I'm excited to see how he does, because this is by far the biggest challenge, and it just goes to show the route to the top sometimes isn't the way that we expect it to be.
As for Chelsea, Jules, is this a change in approach from them? Are they actually planning to try and have something more long-term in place?
I mean, you don't appoint Graham Potter if you want something short-term, because this is not what he does. He builds things, and he has a philosophy that needs a bit of time to get implemented. And like the boys were saying, if he was to improve those players, you can only do that on a long-term basis. It's not going to happen in the space of 3 weeks. So obviously, and you don't give him a six-year deal either if you don't think that this is worth it. So I think the new ownership and the people who have made that decision, Todd Boehly, clearly are thinking long-term here, or certainly mid-term to long-term, let's put it that way. And I think it's a good choice if that's what you want. But then, can you stay 2 years without winning anything, for example? Can you be 2 years without Champions League football? Let's say that the Potter project takes 2 years to really start being successful. What happens in the next 2 years if it's not really working, if they finish fifth every time, if there's no trophies in domestic cups, for example? You'd have to stick with him, and it would be harder to stick with him then than to say now, oh yeah, this is a long-term plan, don't worry about result, don't worry about this, do your thing, we will let you do your thing, we will let you the freedom to do what you want, let's find a sporting director together, director of football together, all that kind of stuff. I'm all on board with that. But if in 2 years' time they haven't qualified for the Champions League, then I think they might have to revisit it. But then that's one for then. For now, I think it was a really good thing what they did in terms of who to come next after Thomas Tuchel. I think it was the perfect choice. They could have tried to get someone else, but I think he made a lot of sense. But now he will have to win. Even if you're ready to be a bit patient, he will have to win and be successful.
Was it fair, do you think, Nader, on Tuchel, that he was sacked?
As far as sackings go, you never really get all the information. So whether something's fair or not, I'm not sure. I think the way that Chelsea are in this moment, it's not, you know, it's obviously not them at their best. But then when you see the amount of time and money that was spent in the transfer window bringing in new talent to replace the people that had left, you're thinking it's going to be a longer term thing. Because like the window literally closed last week, I think it was, or, you know, within the last 2 weeks. So for him to lose his job, I understand the Zagreb result was a bad result. But realistically, like, Does that now make them a bad side? Are they looking at thinking that they can't get any better? Is this the Chelsea at their peak under Tuchel? It didn't feel like that to me, but then in the same breath, you know, I didn't spend the billions of dollars or pounds that were required to own a football club. And I guess for any ownership group, it's at the end of the day, it's going to be their decision about who leads their football club forward. And they must have decided enough was enough, and they thought this is the guy that we want going forward. And that's why, you know, there's that 5-6 year deal and the hope that he will bring better times to Chelsea and bring player development along, which maybe they thought Tuchel wasn't really doing. So it did feel early. But like I said before, the fact that Potter has come in, it sort of quelled that sort of element of discontent about Tuchel being sacked as early as he did. And I think if we did see one of those familiar faces just being brought in for a short-term fix, like maybe in the past we saw with Chelsea, then perhaps that would be a bigger problem. But instead, you know, the name Tuchel, for as well as he did, it seems like all eyes are on Potter now and people are already really excited to see how he does.
We talked about this yesterday, Shaka, but he's getting some great players, as we've seen there. He's inheriting some great players in this side. What's the biggest hurdle he has coming into this team?
I think the biggest hurdle is just being accepted by the dressing room as being the leader. Coming in from Brighton into a dressing room like Chelsea's with the kind of egos that obviously inhabit that dressing room, it's about how quickly he gets that respect, how quickly they accept him as being the person who will be there and leading Chelsea in this certain direction over for the next few years. That's the only uncertainty for me. I think he comes in and he does that, just given what we've seen from him before and his previous jobs. There's no question in my mind, and as inexact a science as it is, as football coaching, football management can be, I think he gets the best out of Chelsea, gets his ship back on its rails, because it is a very good team. We are talking about a team that finished third behind City and Liverpool last season, that won the Champions League a season and a half ago, and despite the kind of scattergun approach to the transfer window this summer, did bring in a lot of talent. I think he harnesses that talent, gets the respect out of the dressing room. I think it works.
If memory serves me right, we're talking about a turnaround at Chelsea, if that's indeed... Well, they do need a turnaround. They need a turnaround in performance and results. It's a long season. It's just started and there's time for that. If memory serves me right, the turnaround was pretty quick at Brighton. It was a chalk and cheese approach. If you go back, for those people that watched a fair amount of Brighton, the approach of Chris Hughton and the approach of Graham Potter is black and white. It's chalk and cheese. One's extremely pragmatic and the other is very front foot, playing football from the back, different shape, everything. The other thing is, if you'd have said to Graham Potter when he was at Osterhans, you'd be managing Brighton and Chelsea, he'd have laughed at you. So this is an unbelievable opportunity. But some of the rhetoric coming from Chelsea is a little strange. I mean, Todd Boehly reportedly and his cohorts had an eye on Potter from the middle of the summer. They were already having doubts about Thomas Tuchel back in June or July, which is very strange with the money they're giving to Thomas Tuchel to buy players when they don't have a sporting director. So all these messages are mixed about also, you know, Boehly and his cohorts and his investors knew about Graham Potter. Well, who's telling them? Because these guys don't know Graham Potter from anybody, really. I mean, so somebody's advising them on that front. And the other side of the coin from Graham Potter going in, it's not dissimilar to Nagelsmann at RB Leipzig going to Bayern Munich. And before people go downstairs and start typing, I'm not comparing. I'm just saying, we had this discussion about Nagelsmann. He was interviewed about the scenario walking into the Bayern Munich dressing room, and he himself said he was nervous. At Leipzig, he was the big star. They had good players, but he was the star. Goes to Bayern, and you walk in at the time, it's Lewandowski, it's Müller, it's all these great players. It's frightening sometimes. So Graham Potter's taking this confident, and I'm sure he is a confident, self-assured guy, with his ideas, but he's walking out of that Brighton dressing room, and now he's walking in, he's telling Thiago Silva what to do, he's telling Koulibaly where he wants him to stand, he's telling Reece James, who's now, you know, one of the best full-back stroke wing-backs in the game, N'Golo Kante, Pierre Aubameyang's in the door, you've got all these attacking players. It's a different conversation. It can affect a manager. And so it's not going to be easy for him. And those players have to listen. If three or four of those senior players don't listen, and turn the other way, it's a huge problem for him. I hope he does not face that. We're not seeing that at Bayern with Nagelsmann, certainly not. I don't think we'll see it with Graham Potter, but it can be a problem. Going from talking to players at one side of the Premier League, although Brighton are doing well at the moment, talking to players that are not at the same level to these superstars is a different ball game, and you might just have to do it slightly differently. But I don't see, unless it's some severe unprofessionalism here, I think this is the best appointment with who was available that they could have made.
You've answered my next question. It feels like, with everything you're saying, that you would say that as well. You think that this was the best person.
Well,
for
unless
the
you're going to go out and get the Man City or Liverpool manager who's struggling at the moment, but we know he's a great. Unless you're going to go out and get one of them, or unless you're going to go out and bring in another guy like Nagelsmann from the, one of the top leagues around Europe, where do you turn? Where do you turn? You turn to a progressive manager who is has a great opportunity, who wants to play football the right way, who's very self-assured and knows what he wants, but he's just not a big name. But that doesn't matter. It's about getting results. So I've thought he was in the line for a decent job for a long time. I just never felt it would be a job as big as this. I never. I felt it would be a Tottenham who were looking. I felt it might have been a Newcastle, a West Ham, but I never, maybe an Arsenal at the time, but I never felt it would be one of the real big cheeses in European football.
Yeah, challenge certainly lying ahead for him. Chelsea still fifth favourites with the bookies to finish in the top four. Liverpool are second favourites, but Liverpool are currently below them in the table. Granted, it's just a place and a point. Who has the bigger hill to climb for you, Nadim?
You know, even though Liverpool have had this start to the season, there is still the belief that they will find their form. You know, seeing players like Thiago coming back, you know, obviously they were down in midweek, but seeing him come back, there'll be a sense of normality that I think will exist within Liverpool. And they're still capable of going on a run where maybe they win 5 to 10 games back to back. I think for this Chelsea side, you know, it's, again, they're not a million miles away from top four. And especially when you see a club like Brighton in there at this moment in time, surely their manager leaving is going to derail them just that little bit. So it's going to be very, very competitive. But this is the way we thought it would be. This is what we hoped it would be when people are investing in their sides to be able to try and finish in the top four and win leagues. Like, no one should really be going backwards like that. So I think Liverpool will find their form at some point. And I think Chelsea, they're also very, very good. As Craig was saying, they are a good side. They've got really good players. And to give them credit, you know, we can talk about Potter coming in and maybe not being respected by the players. Well, I don't believe that to be the case for players like the ones who exist at Chelsea, because for as much as there's an ego, the sense of ego because of success, and that success has come from hard work, and I think that's a change in mentality which has happened a lot around a lot of football clubs around the world over the years. So I think if his methods are good and proper and he can set them up in a way which makes them better, I think Chelsea will be fine. But I still feel like Liverpool finish above them just because when they click into gear, you know, the only team that's really been able to sort of stay with them over the last few years has been Man City. So I think it's a bigger challenge for Chelsea potentially, but I think if it clicks, they'll be just fine.
Just briefly, I'm not suggesting, and I don't need them not saying that, but I'm not suggesting the Chelsea players would disrespect the manager. But trust me, when results don't go your way, look at Ralph Rangnick at Man United, who's not really a big name, but he's been around the block. Look, when results don't go your way, it's much easier to leak stories out about the training's not right and this is not right and that's not right with a guy who's not so revered in the game. It's much easier to try and throw him under the bus than it is some of these bigger guys. We saw it last year at Man United. How many stories do you see coming out of City? How many stories do you see coming out of Liverpool? You don't. Not really. But whenever these managers go in that players just look at, and there's no doubt the United managers players were looking at Rangnick, and he was looking at them, don't get me wrong, and saying, what a load of rubbish. But they were looking at him going, training's garbage. This is garbage. It's all his fault. And they leak stories out. It is much easier to do it when you think a manager is weak and maybe shouldn't be there. And that's the only downside, potentially, I can see to this.
Well, obviously, Liverpool have had their troubles to start this season too, Jules. Where do you stand on who has the bigger hill to climb?
Well, Klopp said after the defeat at Napoli that they will have to reinvent themselves. Not sure how he will do that and what does that even mean. But certainly Potter will have to reinvent Chelsea right now because this is a new, he's a new manager, he will have very different ideas. Even if they both play three at the back, he will have different ideas to Thomas Tuchel. He will have a different philosophy. He will want different things from certainly from some of the players. So this is a very different process because, like Nathan said, Liverpool, they know exactly, it's just not clicking right now. There's a lot of players out of form, but at some point that form will come back or certainly will pick up and they will click again, like they've clicked for the last 6 years that Klopp has been there. For Chelsea, we will see when they click under Potter. They might click very quickly and things are great and there's a manager bounce and then they keep the bounce and they improve and progress and have a very good season. But it might also take 2 weeks, 4 weeks after the international break, maybe a bit longer, because they will also play every 3 days, so there will be less time on the training ground that maybe Potter would have wished for. So that would be fascinating. But I think that right now, if you look at it, surely it's Chelsea with a brand new manager, someone who, again, is new to all of this, new to a top club, new to that kind of pressure, new to that kind of dressing room compared to Klopp, where, okay, it's not been great for them so far. They've had injuries, but at some point those players are going to come back, find their best form again, and things should improve for Liverpool. So I would still think that Liverpool should finish above Chelsea. But, you know, if Potter hits the ground running straight away, then I think they could be onto something very good at Chelsea as well.
I've had a thought.
Good?
I've had a thought. Every sacking has a silver lining. This is great for everybody's predictions at the start of the season. Everyone. If you've gone for Chelsea outside the top four, like me, I had them in fifth. And you've gone for Arsenal and Tottenham, like me, in third and fourth. There's a get out here. Wow. Wow.
Don't think we haven't brought those up, those predictions. We've been happy to do that.
What's that? The predictions are out the window now. Because if Chelsea get in the top four, we'll go, wow, well, I didn't know at the start of the season, Thomas Tuchel, they'd never get in the top four. Now look at this manager bounce that Jules just talks about. So we're all off the hook with these predictions, Shaq.
Well, some including me. We know what's important to Craig all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Listen, to your question, Kay, I think Liverpool have the higher hill to climb, as you phrased it, just because of what the expectation of Liverpool is. The expectation is that they are the club that are going to run Man City down. They are going to go deep in the Champions League, where I don't think the bar is as high for Chelsea. That being said, though, I think there's a better cushion for Jurgen Klopp if they don't hit those heights, because they've been so good and so consistent for so long. You can accept what happened in 2020, 2021, I think it was, with Liverpool, where they finished top four, and you have faith that he will turn things around and it will come good again. I'm not sure Potter has that soft landing, that if they don't get into the top four, that it will be as well, you know, received, and okay, we'll get it right, just because he's that new in this job.
Liverpool, that, you know, one of the lads mentioned, was it reinventing themselves, or Stevie touched on it the other day, back to basics, whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, is Trent Alexander-Arnold ever going to be the best defensive fullback? No, but my God, he can be a damn sight better defensively than he was. Right, and that's pulling somebody in a room and showing them and talking to them and maybe putting their arm around them or kicking them up the backside. And he's not the only one. I mean, Gomez got taken off. He was horrendous. Van Dijk has been terrible. Van Dijk has not marshalled that back line this year. In fact, I'll go as far to say we're maybe seeing some flaws in Van Dijk because Liverpool are having to defend more and been more vulnerable because they're not closing teams down the same. They're not pressing the same. Teams are playing around them easier, and so his defensive capabilities are being pressured and questioned more. And we're seeing some flaws in his game as well. So it's completely across that back line at Liverpool.
But both those teams have flaws, but both those managers now have an opportunity with this unforeseen or unexpected break coming in the middle of a season to put things right or to bed yourself in Potter's case. So how does Jurgen Klopp use this break to set that ship straight? How does Graham Potter use this break to get himself bedded in and get some of his ideas bedded in with Chelsea? So now if you are not playing well, this break couldn't ask for this. On the other side of that same coin, if you're Manchester United is the first club that comes to mind. And you're playing well. Despite the Sociedad result, you're playing well. You're winning games. You just want to keep those games coming 2 a week. So that as I phrase it, unforeseen break can affect clubs differently. And I think we'll know a lot more about the clubs and the managers and how prepared they are to fix it once games do resume.
Well, there's more talk about the appointment of Potter at Chelsea on the latest Gavin Jules podcast. And, of course, if you want to hear more from Jules...
Oh, he's a Celtic fan.
...and his Celtic top, then make sure to download that wherever you get your podcasts. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevian Shepherd-Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC.
Leaders Real Madrid will face Mallorca on Sunday, but they will be doing so without the injured Karim Benzema. There's been reports in Spain about the RHV, Rodrigo, Hazard and Vinny. Craig, I know your new favourite topic is about whether they should start Eden Hazard. So,
that's the weekend.
What are your
thoughts on it? That's the weekend show taken care of as well, isn't it? That's the rundown done. Hazard, kickoff. Well, he got his goal against Celtic, I would say that, but he did miss a sitter in the first half when he came on. Clearly, they just haven't got anybody who gets anywhere close to Karim Benzema. Not many do. I think they should be OK for a very short period. I don't know what the prognosis is for Benzema, but for a short period, I think they could get away with it. They kind of did last year. Anything longer than... You know, if it was 2 or 3 months, I don't know what it is, if it was 2 or 3 months, that's a problem for their title.
A goal and an assist, Xhaka, has got to get you a start against Mallorca, hasn't it, at home?
Well, listen, no surprises. Comes as no shock me saying that Hazard hasn't lived up to expectation, but he's looked a whole lot better since. We see how he coped with his injuries, whether he can find his form. To Craig's point, it's... Losing somebody like Karim Benzema is not easy for anybody to replace, even if you're Real Madrid. So now you're asking somebody to step up, knowing full well that they can't do that job fully. Barcelona would struggle to do the same with Lewandowski. We could keep having this discussion around any number of players of that quality. But it's whether Real Madrid can fix their tools, give them the personnel and carve results out. And against Mallorca, I see absolutely no reason why not. And it's a significant opportunity for Eden Hazard to kind of put a lot of his issues behind him. We'll see how long a run in the team he gets, but there's no questioning that He was once a very good footballer, and he's now had an opportunity to show that again.
We're just a couple of months away, Jules, from the World Cup. What are the concerns for the French national team when it does come to Karim Benzema? And where do you see stand on this Eden Hazard starting in his absence at Real Madrid?
There's not really any concern for Benzema's fitness, because this is, just to answer Craig's question, it's 3 weeks, maybe a little bit less. Even so, it's not serious, and which is good, because at his age, obviously, recovering from a serious injury takes longer. So Deschamps was happy. He will not make, I think it's fair to say, the next international break, of course, which I guess that rest would be good for him again before the World Cup. And for Eden, I think this was already an idea in the back of Ancelotti's mind during the summer. He knew that Rodrigo could play centrally if needed, but he also knew that with Hazard, more as a false nine really than a proper number nine, but he was another option who could play a little bit differently. We saw against Celtic after he came on, for example, the long through ball for Vinicius, who then missed his 1v1 against Hart, that he could also do that. So drop a little bit deeper and almost play as another playmaker for the pace of Vinicius and whoever else plays on the right-hand side. So I'm really curious to see, one, how long he will stay fit. Two, if he really gets, let's say, 2 or 3 games in a row, because he might also play in the Champions League next week, maybe the league after, in the league game after that, just before the international break, also in that position. So that would be, you know, three and a half games, which is for him a lot, and see how he adapts, see how he does. Can he be consistently well? Can he bring something to this team? Or will Ancelotti change after an hour because he's been completely anonymous? So it's a good opportunity. I agree with the boys, for him, and he has to take it now, because he's had a few in the past that he never took. This one, even in a different position for him, a position that he's actually rarely played in before, it's another opportunity that he can't miss.
Well, yesterday we talked about Xavi's praise for Ousmane Dembele. He is not the only one to have been waxing lyrical about the player. This is Martin Brathwaite. He says he makes more of a difference than Lewandowski. He has huge talent. I've never seen anyone like that. Messi is something else, but I've never seen anyone like Ousmane. Craig, this is quite the Dembele loving right now. Can he keep up this fine form?
Well, I don't agree with that statement, but that's just my opinion. It's about putting the ball in the back of the net, and Lewandowski has done it consistently for years and years. Hats full, bags full of goals. Yeah, I mean, we've always known Dembele was a talent. That was never really up for discussion. It was discipline, it was fitness, and it was form. And at the moment, or to be fair to him, towards the end, the second half of last year, it got better. And then, of course, he had the summer where it was, he didn't know if he was coming or going. The longer it went on, the longer it did look like he was going to stay. I believe the contract is a salary reduction for him, so that hasn't affected him. And his form is good. And so, for me, it's like, it's not a big pat on the back here. This is like, well, this is what you were paid to do. This is what you should be bringing. This is what we know you have. It's not a surprise. It's a frustration when he's not doing that, and it's good to see when he's doing it. So no, I get it. It's a great option for Xavi, one that he maybe thought he wasn't going to get on a regular basis when he came in, because he thought, what kind of player am I getting? One that maybe doesn't want to be here, one that's inconsistent, and one that's injured half the time. At the moment, he's not got any of those problems.
What's the thoughts on it, Jules, when we look at the French national team picture? Is he playing himself into a starting berth there?
I mean, now I think his place in the squad is there's no debate around here. He's regained that place that he lost, by the way. Let's not forget, he's a World Cup winner. And then he disappeared because of all the reasons that Craig just mentioned. There was no consistency, there was a lot of injuries, there was a lot of issues off the pitch with discipline. So he lost that place that he will regain now. He will be called up if he stays fit. If he's not injured between now and the international break, he will be called up by Deschamps. And this is obviously a very key international break, because it's the last one before the squad are announced for the World Cup. And usually, or certainly for us in France, when Deschamps called you up in the last transfer window before a big tournament, you are in, really. We kind of know that. So I think he will be there. Will he start? That's another debates, especially more because of the tactical system. If Deschamps keeps the three at the back and still plays Benzema and Mbappe up front with a 10 behind, whether that's Nkunku or Griezmann, then there's no space there for a winger, Dembele or Coman, players like that. However, Dembele brings him another option. He can go back to a back four in a 4-3-3, for example. He can also play with a back three in a 3-4-3 with two wingers alongside a Benzema, or having even Kylian as a sort of a winger, so need to start or out of possession. So he brings him something different, and Deschamps loves him. All managers, every manager that has had him or worked with him, loves him. The problem is, there was a time where you could not really rely on him, despite all his talents. But now, if he shows that consistency and the fact that he can stay fit, then I think Deschamps will love him again and will take him. And I think he could potentially play a big part, even as an impact sub, for France at the World Cup.
Well, Jules, you mentioned Antoine Griezmann, so let's go there, shall we, when we talk about the French national team. It's a crazy condition now. It's these restricted minutes we're seeing from him at Atleti, yet he's delivering in those minutes. So how will that be seen on the national stage?
I think Deschamps is concerned. However, he was not concerned for, he would not be concerned for Benzema because of the injury. I think he would be concerned for Griezmann's lack of game time. Even if half an hour, it's not so bad. But I think that's a worry for Deschamps. It's a worry because you don't know what kind of a physical state Griezmann will get to the World Cup. And also, let's not forget again that there's only a week before the end of your domestic league and the start of the World Cup. In normal World Cups, you've got far more time to prepare before the competition in the summer than it is this time round. So you want, for example, a player a bit out of shape, in normal World Cup year, you can maybe sort of bring him back quite close to the rest of the squad. This year, no chance, because they won't have the time to do that, to work on his fitness. So that's a worry. If he keeps playing half an hour and keep producing goals as an impact sub, I think Deschamps will still think, okay, he deserves his place in the team and in the squad. And then, despite not being great in the last few France games, I think Deschamps still sees him as a big part in the starting 11, in that sort of number 10 role behind Mbappe and Benzema. So I think he will go to the World Cup, but the fitness might be an issue, and Deschamps doesn't like those kind of issues.
When you're coming on for half an hour or so, whatever it is, 25 minutes, you're getting something. There's no doubt you're getting something. You're getting better than what you're getting in training. But generally, the last 20 minutes, half an hour of a game has slowed down considerably from the start. Not always, but most of the time. And so you're coming into a slower game and it's a little bit easier, and you're not getting that sharpness from the first hour, obviously, particularly the first half, where it's more frantic, it's more pacey. And so you are getting something out of it, but you're not getting anywhere near as much as if you played the first hour of the game, because everybody's a little bit more tired, the sting's been taken out of the game a little bit, becomes more of a tactical game, particularly in Spain. And so he's getting bits and pieces. It's just whether Deschamps looking at other players and thinking that's still going to be good enough for us, or whether he's got other players that are fully fit and are playing that might be sharper. That's a big decision for a coach to take. It's one that they don't like to be put in that spot, but quite often a lot of them are, with scenarios at clubs for certain players.
It really is an interesting situation. If you'd like to read more about it, head on over to our website. Sid Lowe has written an article over there, and it's definitely worth a read.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. The headlines in France are about the troubling scenes on Thursday in the Europa Conference League match versus Cologne, Nice's game. It was delayed due to violent clashes in the crowd at the Allianz Riviera. Julien Laurent to tell us here more about it. Jules, what actually happened here? And what's the latest on the situation?
Well, it seems that the Nice ultras were provoked by some of the Cologne ultras, some of the Cologne fans who came over in heavy numbers. To be fair, there were a lot of Cologne fans, and most of them were very peaceful and were just there for the football. And the minority of them were obviously there for the wrong reasons and for the fighting. And it felt like certainly the early footage that I saw covering the game was that a lot of those Cologne fans who were there for the fight were trying to get to the stands where the Nice ultras were instead of staying in the away end, if you want, which obviously once you provoke the Nice ultras or any other ultras, they're going to respond. So then we're starting seeing a lot of violence within the stadium. That was before most of the normal fans, if you want, or the rest of the fans had arrived in the ground. And then obviously the police intervened, they closed the ground so no one could get in or out to make sure that everything was under control before reopening the gates for the rest of the fans to arrive. I mean, we saw some people badly injured, people were knifed, people fell from the stand down. There was a lot of arrest as well made by the police. In the end, the game started an hour late, but still happened in good condition, if you want. There was no more troubles over there. But the problem is, it raised questions. The first one is why we knew this could happen. We knew there was a high risk, and yet the police didn't seem to act when it was needed, really, so early on. Around the Cologne fans, for example, or certainly something more solid should have been put in place. Secondly, this is not the first time, unfortunately, for Nice. Whether you agree with Lucien Favre when he said today the Nice fans did nothing wrong, it's not the first time, and it actually happened many times at Nice that we saw crowd troubles. And the third one, maybe the most worrying, is that Marseille very soon will host Frankfurt and their fans. That Monaco, for example, will host the Ferencváros fan, who also have a fringe of quite violent fans. So I think French police and French authorities as a whole will have to make sure that we don't see those things again, not just this season, but in the near future, when there's other high-risk games taking place in France.
What are the potential ramifications and punishments then that could be dished out, Jules?
Well, there's obviously an investigation now from UEFA, which is the right thing to do, to see, you know, what happened, who caused the problem, who caused the troubles, who started the troubles. Maybe if maybe Nice and the local authorities were at fault for not providing more policing or not organizing the policing in a better way, maybe. And then you can see sanction, of course. For Nice, for Cologne, there could be ramification in the sense that you could have part of the Allianz Riviera, the Nice Stadium, closed. So the next games in Europe might be played behind closed door or fully behind closed door, or half behind closed door. It depends. There might be financial sanction, of course, for both clubs for the crowd trouble and not keeping their fans, you know, not controlling their own fans, for example. So it's not the end of this. We will hear more from it from UEFA once the investigation is over. And even if there was no ramification, no sanctions, this was such a terrible spectacle again. And I know every time we see crowd trouble, we talk about it. But every single time it's humiliating. Whatever it is in France, in Italy, in Spain, wherever, it's such a deplorable spectacle and something that we should not see in football. I mean, it's beyond me that some fathers take a day off from work to go down to watch a football match, but not really to watch the match. They're there for the fight with other people, other football fans. It's just, I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's always so sad to see. Jules, thanks so much for the update. To keep up to date with all the latest from European football, be sure to head on over to our ESPN FC page on YouTube.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
There were many trending topics over the summer. Cristiano Ronaldo's future, how many goals Haaland is going to score. Where are Xhaka's power rankings? The people would like to know. Xhaka, whatever happened to your power rankings? Is the algorithm under maintenance or have you sold it off? Xhaka, it's Thursday, yet no power rankings. We have heard nothing from you this season. Are you trying to shift the responsibility to Don? Xhaka, when are we getting the power rankings? We need them. Listen, and we need them yesterday.
Don't kid yourself. This was nothing else than all Shaq's family and friends tweeting in, saying, quick, get these power rankings back.
Well, not if they love him.
I had to, they had to send it out to Silicon Valley to do some adjustments so it was even more exact this time around.
So it's back.
The power rankings are back here and better, I'd add. But what, far more exact.
Power rankings
of
what?
We'll let Jules and Nadim and Craig be the decider of that. Here are this week's power rankings.
Where do you want me to go from? Top to bottom? We've got top since the first week. Real Madrid, perfect. Barca.
So how come Napoli are only 10? They're second in Serie A and they've just whipped Liverpool.
You want me to start at 10? Or
yes, please.
I'm going to start at 1. Back to where I was. Barca, one draw for his going to be season, but they've been absolutely fantastic. Ajax and Benfica, both perfect themselves. PSG, only second in Liga. I know what Jules is going to say. Leave Lanz out of this. I'll get to that. Flamengo in the Copa Libertadores final, second in Brazil. Freiburg, top in Germany. Atalanta in Serie A. Dinamo Zagreb, second in Croatia. And then that big result against Chelsea. They're in. Napoli, second in Serie A?
Yeah.
And then a good result against
they
Liverpool.
They were second, yeah.
Sees them in.
10th, though, for Napoli.
Yeah, well, look at the other teams. I mean, I can't. Zagreb beating Chelsea in at 9.
And I know you've watched every game of
every
so
single
far
one.
This season.
Well,
has he even been to Zagreb?
I've put the data into the algorithm. Might not have watched the full 90 minutes, but I put the data in myself for every game.
Well, let's see what PSG fan Jules thinks of PSG in 5th.
Fifth or sixth, it's in power ranking, there's the word power, of course, and power as in the power of the leagues where some of those clubs play, right? How can the team second in the Croatian league? I mean, Xhaka probably knows three teams in the Croatian league. He's ahead of the team second in Serie A, for example. I mean, and Flamengo is there, okay. Do you know who they play in the Copa Libertadores final? Because there's another club who also qualified for the final this week.
What about
only second, only 2 points behind them in the league.
Paranaense are seventh, so they're not in.
Yeah, why?
They lost their last league game, so they're out.
But shouldn't that give you
they
more?
Drew,
doesn't that make you more powerful if you're lower in the league and you manage to do something like this?
No.
No?
Exactly.
No, that's not how this algorithm works. So if you're seventh and you get to a final, no, that's not how the algorithm works, Kay.
Aren't Real Madrid less powerful now without Karim Benzema?
What? They're top in Spain.
Yeah, this is not a projection ahead.
Yeah, they're top in Spain. They've been perfect. I can't, because Benzema's now injured, that doesn't affect the data.
Oh,
here's a question for you. Do people get upset at your power rankings?
Yeah, Jules.
No, but I mean online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people get really angry. But, like I keep saying,
that affects you.
You can't argue with science.
I mean, what they don't realise is when people get really angry at you, it affects you because you're very brittle that way. It hurts.
No. Yeah. It's all science.
I
trust in the science.
Your two-hour drive home, you cry.
Well,
that's for different reasons.
Nadim, any problems with the power rankings?
No, listen, I think they've achieved their goal, and I think they're very good at creating engagement. I think when you look at, say, Zagreb in eight, I'm assuming that you'll be watching them this weekend, Shaka, because if they win again, I imagine they'll climb in higher in the rankings, or did I mistake that? Is this the wrong algorithm?
I'll be putting in the data. just to correct Jules, I don't know three teams in Croatia.
Any team could have beaten Chelsea this week, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And they'd have been in your power ranking.
No, well, they had to do something domestically.
What have they done domestically?
Oh, Croatia, Zagreb.
The only team in Croatia.
Yes, there's Croatia, Zagreb.
Listen.
Everybody knows that.
If you want to find out the power rankings of where these guys sat on the team bus when they were playing football professionally, make sure to check out the latest edition of Extra Time over on our YouTube page where all will be revealed. Thanks so much for joining us today, though. That is the latest from ESPN FC. We will see you tomorrow when we'll be doing it all over again. Goodbye.
Farewell.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray, Shaka Hislop, Craig Burley and Nadim Anua here to answer your questions. We'll get started straight away. First question, Craig. Should Conte move Son to the bench?
No. Why would you move a guy that's been your best player along with Harry Kane for, I don't know,
a very long time?
Now, I presume you're talking about the, might be something to do with the Marseille game. Because I didn't watch that game. It was one of the games on the screen, but Dan and I decided I think
it might be the zero goals this season.
Yeah, but yeah, doesn't make you a bad player, does it? No. We had that game on.
Right.
But it wasn't a priority.
Okay, all right. I know how that works. I'm with Craig. I don't see the reason to. The old cliche, especially around goal scorers, is it's just a matter of time. They want to get one. It kind of opens the floodgate, and I expect the same to be with Heung-min Son. I see absolutely no reason to leave him on.
Do you agree, Nadim?
Kind of, but I suppose the pressure's coming because Richarlison's on the bench, and Richarlison's coming on and having like a major impact. So for Son, when you see that he's not really scoring those goals, I think for Conte it's a big decision as to, is he doing everything else really well? Because on the bench is somebody who seems more dynamic at this moment in time and who is having a bigger impact. But it does feel crazy to think about Son not starting for Spurs, but it seems like they've ended up getting a good deal with Richarlison. It seems like a very, very able backup should Son drop to the bench.
For City TV, Nadim, what are your areas of concern this season as a City fan? Is it the defence?
Is it the defence? I'm like everybody else. I think we've been surprised by how many goals they've conceded early on in this season, and they have shown some element of weakness. But then I suppose the positives are they've been able to come back in those games and they scored a ton of goals. You know, they've scored so many to this point. But yeah, maybe the defensive side of things is a concern. But I think when you look around the league, there aren't that many teams who people still don't think they can get at. So whatever they feel about City, maybe they feel that towards Liverpool now. Maybe they think they might be able to get something against Spurs. Maybe they feel they can get stuff against Arsenal. So ultimately, I don't think it's going to be to City's detriment that much. I think when people do come back and they are fit, it's more competitive, and I imagine they'll get more into a groove. But as a concern, you know, everything, they're still involved in everything. They're poised. They've got players playing well, got players to come back in. So, you know, being in the position they're in now, it's not the end of the world. So City TV says everything is looking up for Man City.
That was your City TV spokesman, Nader Manua. For Shaka, Newcastle TV spokesman, how many goals do you think Isak can score for Newcastle in the Premier League this season?
I have to say, I was really pleasantly surprised by the start, the way he took his goal. I know he had one disallowed as well. Between now and the end of the season, I think if Isak gets 15, that's a very good return.
You think he can do it, 15?
Yeah, I think he can get 15.
Oh, we had an under or over of 12 the other day. And
well, I tell you what, if we have an under and over of 12 for £70 million, dollars, whatever it is, euros, pesetas...
Stop complaining about price, guys.
If we're having an over and under of 12 for a striker who they've paid a fortune for, then we've got a big problem.
We can't be complaining about price tags anymore. I mean, the one that Frank always harps on is Cucurella. If he was, what, 70? If Cucurella is 70 million, then Isak's 70
million. If you're an over-under in 12, that's a struggle.
Yeah.
If you're a midfielder getting 12, yeah, decent season. If you're a striker getting 12 and you've played a lot of games, not particularly good.
I've given up on criticising price tags because none of it makes any sense.
He's an international footballer. Mind you, as it turns out, his goal against Liverpool, and almost two against Liverpool, one was inches offside, but his goal was fantastic. But it turns out it's not as difficult to score against Liverpool as we thought earlier on in the season, our pre-season. We thought it was going to be a difficult task, but it turns out big Mr. Van Dijk and his cronies are having a bit of a nightmare. So, 12. Now, if you're a striker and it's 12, you're going to be looking at 20 plus.
All right.
Otherwise, you can pack your bags.
Nadim, over or under 12 for Isak this season?
Yeah, I'm going to say over. I think 12 feels kind of low. I'm kind of with Craig on that. I think for the money they're sort of spending on him and what their hopes are for the season in terms of potentially finishing maybe top six, who knows? Like, you want your striker to score more than 12 goals, and I think they brought him in to do just that. I can see them maybe scoring 60 this season. If that's the case, then yeah, I think he'll be closer to 20.
Craig, how hard is the transition for Casemiro to go playing with Kroos and Modric to midfielders who are not at that level technically?
Yeah, quite difficult. And I think he's also got an issue with his mobility at the moment and his fitness. He wasn't particularly good in the Sociedad game. McTominay's played before him. There's a fitness issue, of course there is. But yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult going from... It's not the same, but I had... When I went from Chelsea to Celtic, it was a good standard to a really good standard. And then I found it myself when I moved from Celtic to Derby County, and they were near the bottom of the Premier League, and it was a younger squad, and it was guys who'd been around. And as soon as you turn up for training, you can see it. The standard is just not the same as where you've came from. And that's difficult because you need to adjust your game. Because the runners and the people that you play with that are making the movement are not making the same movement, and so you start second guessing yourself. And then you might take and what I found was you start taking a couple extra touches because a striker, if you play me, say, at Celtic playing with Henrik Larsson, one of the best in the business, and he's making all these great runs, and you play, and then you move to Derby County, and the forwards at that time were not doing the same and were struggling, it has an effect on you because you start doing things differently. Instead of just playing that ball in behind, just taking an extra touch, and then you're getting caught on the ball. It is really can be a difficult problem to solve for some players.
What's the City TV view on Casemiro at United so far then, Nadim?
I think when he was arriving, for most people, the sort of feel was that, well, the money must be really good because it seems a strange thing to do to leave Madrid for Manchester. But now, I think in that Sociedad game, I don't think he was brilliant, but I was seeing little bits that he was doing, maybe breaking up the play, making some of the decisions in terms of passing and stepping forward. And yeah, I guess he's going to be a good signing for them because it seems like there's a better sort of energy around Man United right now. And if he's playing in there week in, week out, and he can get used to the pace of the Premier League and the physicality of it, then of course somebody that's won five Champions League and is used to winning titles, winning lots of games every season, should benefit that group of players and benefit those fans who come in to try and see the team be successful again.
Okay. Nadim, heading into the World Cup in a couple of months' time, are you concerned with the presumed starting backline for your England? Stones, Maguire, Trent Alexander-Arnold have not been in good form to start the season.
My England. I'm not sure about that, but anyway. Well, Trent doesn't really play for England, so I don't see that as being much of a concern. Maguire not playing for Man United, I think that's potentially writing on the wall for him for this World Cup in the summer, provided they have somebody in there who they feel will do better than him. And like, it's even though it's like 2 months away, it's still not that close. I think Southgate has an idea of who he's going to be picking and what he wants from them. So I wouldn't be too concerned at this moment. And like I say, the biggest one is probably the Trent situation, for as good a player as he is. I look back at that third goal against Napoli the other day, like that's one of the worst bits of defending I think I've ever seen. So that's probably not going to help him out getting into that England squad, especially when you've got the likes of Reece James, you've got Kieran Trippier, you've got Kyle Walker, who are currently, I think, for England ahead of him.
The worry is, though, one of them might have to play left back. Because that's more good news, because there's a guy called Luke Shaw, and another one called Ben Chilwell, and they're not playing. Chelsea have signed that guy, what was he?
Stevie Nicholls needed.
Man United brought in this young fella as a backup from Dutch football. Be a backup, or you might have to play. Right backs might have to play Trent at left back.
Now, is this why you're not supporting England then in the World Cup, Nadim? It sounded like you were saying, England, relax. I don't think so.
I didn't say that. I did not say I wasn't supporting them. But just to make it clear, I was born in Nigeria, and unfortunately they're not at the World Cup. So, yeah, I don't want to talk too much about England, but hopefully, you know, they do well because the players play in the Premier League. They play for clubs which I like and stuff like that. But I think for the left-back situation, if it goes that way, they'll probably do like they've done in the past and put Trippier to left-back. And that's a look which they've had before and been relatively successful with, even though it wasn't necessarily Southgate's first choice. So, you know, I hope they do well, and I hope they get what they deserve if they play well. But, you know, we'll have to see how that goes.
Well, the thing is, Maguire's out. They can bring Tyrone Mings. Oh, he's been out of favour at Aston Villa. Just got back in. Michael Keane. Oh, that's lots of good news, isn't it? You're an England fan, so it's a good back line.
Are they going to get out of the group?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Iran, the USA, and
Wales.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they're going to get out of the group, they're not.
He and Stevie will be so happy if they don't, though.
I know.
As much as you say it's a confident yes from Craig, if they don't, it would be the funniest thing ever.
But did you not hear how he's really worried about the back line? Could you not sense that?
I didn't sense that at all.
All right.
I'm worried. If they don't get out of the group, I will be gutted. I'm not Stevie. Stevie's very anti-English, you know. We both spent years and years and years in England, and I've let that bitterness wash off me. As it's still on him.
Yes, it is. All right. Shaka, I'll come to all of you on this, but I'll start with you. Did football clubs have leisure activities set up at the training facilities to encourage players to relax and build camaraderie around the squad, like pool tables, ping pong tables, card tables, chess boards, etc.?
FC Dallas had a table tennis board. That's the only club I've been at that had something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the clubs didn't set it up, but would you have like card games and stuff maybe?
Well, we'd have card games on
the bus.
On the bus and flights, but that...
Where did you sit
that,
on
that
the bus?
That deteriorated.
Because you know everybody had, depending what club they were at.
Yeah, I sat generally not right at the back, but not far off it.
Where did you sit?
Just, you know, did you guys have like a middle partition in the bus you had? No.
No.
Middle.
In the middle?
Yeah. Just far enough away from the gaffer, not too far away that I could throw some and annoy him.
Do you all sit like where your positions are on the pitch?
No. You sit with different people.
Right.
Yeah.
Usually involves a card game or something.
Don't any backwards for the rowdy bunch. The really rowdy
bunch. Is it like at school?
Oh,
the cool
absolutely.
Kids at the back?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, but I wasn't one of the cool kids or the rowdy kids, as I put it. I was I was aspiring to be. So I didn't get all the way back. I was just close enough, so I wasn't quite sure which department I was in. That's where I was.
So why were you in the middle?
This my card school was there.
That was okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And it was there was two coolers, one at the back and one at the front. And the journey back I wanted to be hedge my bets for the coolers. So I could have beer on the bus.
Get both.
Just in case I keep my eye on people stealing the cooler.
That's where it was. You wanted to keep, make sure nobody stole.
I tell you where I sat quite often.
Box to box, we call it, Shekhar.
I used to sit on the way back when I was at Derby with the bus driver. At the front. There was a little seat at the front.
Yeah.
It's for the number two driver if there's two drivers. And I used to sit there chatting to the bus driver. It was more fun than talking to some of my teammates. Yeah, yeah.
And closer to the cooler at the front, of course. Naden, where did you sit?
Well, this is the tale of my career. So when I was at QPR as captain, I sat at the back and I was deciding who would come and sit alongside me. Then for City, most of the time I was in the middle. But then when Mancini came, I sat at the front of the bus with the physios because we were the people who would be sitting on the bench and would not be getting any game time. So yeah, progressively moving further and further forward to the point where I got kicked off the bus and then I wasn't travelling. So yeah, very much tells the tale as the guys were saying.
I'm surprised you let you on the bus.
I ever had was right at the end of my career when I was just about to finish and I went to Walsall for a couple of months. It was a disaster all round. I won't go into the details. And we played at Preston North End. And I knew a lot of the lads at Preston. They were Scottish guys that I'd played with, Brian O'Neill and a few others. So after the game, I went for a beer with them. Colin Lee was the Walsall manager, but he wasn't going home on the bus. He wasn't going back to Walsall on the bus. He was going off with his wife somewhere in his car. And I went to the bar to chit-chat with the Preston lads. And I'm in there, blah, 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 and that comes out. There's no bus. The bus has gone. It's heading back towards the West Midlands, the Midlands. So I had to phone Colin, the manager, who's in the car with his wife, who had to phone the bus, and the bus had to do a U-turn.
I bet you were popular. Oh. Lad must have loved that.
So I said to Colin, do you know where the bus is? He went, well, I left a good 15 minutes ago, Craig. I went, all right. I said, so you reckon I've got time to go back in and have another pint then? He said, I wouldn't push it. But the bus had to come back. Oh, when
I could imagine.
Oh, when I got on that bus. Of course, I played it out, didn't I? Get it, the big one. Sometimes the bus doesn't leave without me, you know that. I give it all that. Oh, they were throwing stuff in the bus. Big time, Charlie.
Fuming with you. But Naden, just to go back to the question, obviously we went on to talk about the bus, but were you ever a football club where they did set up these activities to promote team camaraderie?
Yeah, some places I went to had a bit of a players' lounge where you'd have things like pool, table tennis, there'd be tables for cards and stuff because they wanted you to spend more time together and be social. Didn't necessarily always work because there was one point in particular, this was early in my career, from 2005, we had a dartboard at Man City. And I think I had to get taken away because before you knew it, I think Joey Barton was throwing darts at people's legs. So yeah, that type of thing doesn't necessarily always work out for the best. But, you know, in theory, some people want to just get in and get off. So these rooms with pool tables and all that, sometimes all they do is just collect dust or one or two people use them only.
I wonder where you'd all sit now on the bus.
Well,
same place.
Same place.
3/4 of the way back.
Yeah, I wouldn't like being right out the back.
Yeah,
I'm
like, no.
Got to position yourself.
We'll have to see if Naden would let us at the back, won't we? See the sign you used to decide. Anyway,
it's always a bit awkward when you're the new signing.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
If somebody sat in your seat, you were like that.
Yeah, yeah.
This is awkward. I'm going to have to put my foot down. Depending on what lingo they spot. I think that's a universal lingo, isn't it?
Beat it. You're out.
The awkward walk of shame down the bus. All right, thanks so much for your
time. Better than Robbie Musto stealing my kit. We know we've been through that story.
Robbie, if you're watching, it's not clear and obvious.
It's clear and obvious.
Thanks so much for your tweets. Make sure to do it all again tomorrow because we'll be back
Send
at the same time.
For God's sake.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
and what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.